Star Trek fans, and welcome to the Rebinge Deep Space Nine podcast. My name is Kim.
And my name is James.
And we are watching Star Trek Deep Space Nine from the beginning, one episode at a time. Welcome back to the podcast. Today, we are on Season 1, Episode 12, entitled Battle Lines. This episode aired April 25th, 1993. Before we dig into this episode, is there anything from the previous podcast that we need to correct?
No, it was perfect.
Okay, great. I did write down two things that we should just cover quickly. The first one is we said something about tricorders not being good on whether people are dead or not. And that wasn't exactly what Bashir said. He actually said that tricorders aren't good on dead people.
Which means tricorders aren't reliable. So if you scan somebody and it said, yep, they're dead, it means that they might be dead. They might not be dead. It basically makes tricorders useless.
But not on a person who's alive.
That makes it even worse.
It works fine on a person who's alive. It just doesn't work in some cases when they're
dead. But, you know,
dead,
they might be dead,
not dead.
Or they might be alive.
And, you know, that kind of comes up again in this episode, now that I think about it. But anyway, moving on. Okay, and the other thing that I wrote down is you said that Odo was giving Quark the fourth degree. I was wondering what the fourth degree was.
Well, it's like the third degree, but it's one more intense. It's going to 11.
Right. Okay.
That's my excuse.
Okay. Those are the only things I had written down, so let's move into this episode. In the cold open, Miles and Dax are in Sisko's office telling him that they found some files. Miles says it's funny that they were located in ops protocols. I don't know what that means. Miles, by the way, has had a haircut and his sleeves are rolled up.
So he's working man, Miles. He's clearly been doing some work.
Absolutely. That's an important thing for some reason with Miles. He's the only one who does it. Dax then says that the encryption on these files was really easy to break, which makes Sisko wonder if the Cardassians wanted them to find the files.
Well, I think Dax is a pretty good hacker. Sisko does bring up a good point. Deliberate disinformation left by the Cardassians. It seems like the kind of thing they would do. I mean, they act like jerks, so.
Then it flashes to a screen with a very fuzzy image of Kira and some blurred out stuff. You couldn't really read anything on there. At least I couldn't. Sisko turns off the screen saying there isn't anything of strategic value there. Just some personal logs and files on Bajoran terrorists. He says it's a glimpse into the Cardassian mind. I thought he just kind of dropped that word terrorist about Kira pretty easily.
Yeah.
We haven't really called her a terrorist before.
Well, from the Cardassian perspective, they would refer to them as terrorists.
Yes, I just thought it was interesting that Sisko used that word. Then he pulls out the memory device, and three of them look at that little USB-like stick. And Miles says, you might want to warn Kira before she sees the file, just as Kira walks in saying, warn me about what? And Sisko says, they discovered some of the last prefect's personal files, and there's a file on there about you, which you might find disappointing. And Kira kind of laughs and says, I'm a big girl. So Sisko just hands her the device, and then he leaves her alone in the office to look at it. He walks down the steps into ops just as Bashir is calling him from Airlock 14. Bashir is saying that he was there to offload some medical specimens from the Bajoran transport, but the Kai is here and asking for you. And in my notes, I typed, yay, Naomi Osaka is back.
I knew. My notes say, I know you were going to say that.
Yes, if you didn't listen to the very first episode, I kept referring to her as Kai Opaka and Naomi Osaka because it just sounds good. It's just, I don't know, lyrical.
Well, this is something, the Kai appearing unannounced on the station.
Right.
Oh, maybe she's on the station to get the orb back.
She gave me the migraine trigger.
Yeah. Remember that priceless migraine trigger I gave to you? Where is it?
Yeah, we don't even talk about that. So I guess Sisko got to keep it. I mean, Dax was the last one looking at it. It's probably in her quarters.
In the curio cabinet.
Oh, my God. So Sisko smiles when he hears that the Kai is there, and he asks why she's here. And Bashir says, you once offered her a tour of the station. So apparently she's showed up for her tour.
Yeah.
Just then, Kira comes out of the office, and she is very agitated. She waves her hands, and with an incredulous tone, she says, a minor operative.
Oh, yeah.
Whose activities are limited to running errands for the terrorist leaders.
I love that.
She's so annoyed. And her voice goes up like a whole octave as she gets to the end of that sentence because she just gets madder and madder.
I think that does tie back to Sisko's disinformation campaign where he mentioned earlier.
Yeah.
Of downgrade Kira's role.
Maybe it would make sense for if this was Gul Dukat's file, right?
Yeah.
That he left something, sort of a dig to Kira on his way out the door.
Oh, yeah. You could totally see that with him. I mean, you haven't seen a lot of Gul Dukat, and unfortunately, I know more about him from the later ones, but that would make sense for that character to do something like that.
No spoilers.
You could also argue that the details that Gul Dukat has shows the ineptitude of Cardassian intelligence as well. They might actually have these intelligence files, and this is what they actually think. The Cardassians do strike me as an occupying force who would want their own biases confirmed. So they would get mad if intelligence didn't say what they wanted it to.
Sisko interrupts her tirade and says, "When you're through feeling underappreciated, perhaps you'd join me in welcoming the Kai aboard." That calms her right down, and the music starts to play. And next we see Kira leading Kai Opaka onto the promenade past Odo's office.
She seemed genuinely shocked about that. That was great, the way her tone changed.
In episode one, she said something about the Kai never leaving Bajor.
Yeah.
Bashir and Sisko are following behind, and they're talking about how the Kai has never been to the station or even left Bajor before. And Bashir says that she looks preoccupied, which is a little ominous.
Yeah.
They walk up a winding staircase to the second level so she can look out the window. Her costume is so fancy. It's mostly purple, of course, because the show loves purple.
It's the color of the show.
But it's also got bright oranges and deep reds. She continued to wear the sort of nun-like costume, you know, that she had in the very first episode of Emissary.
Yep.
I don't remember if it was the exact same coloring, but it's definitely striking. It's very funny to me how they waffle on this show between just these great, amazing, beautiful costumes and some pretty crappy ones.
Yeah, that is a really good costume.
We've seen at least two costumes that look like they were covered in tinfoil, and then we get something like this. I mean, it is quite a contrast.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Oh, by the way, in this scene, we get to see Morn for the first time. He's left to right carrying a bag.
Oh, I didn't even see him.
Yep.
Okay, that's funny.
Again, another one of those classic Morn in the background scenes. And of course, Morn is going to be around when the Kai is there because he is one of the prophets.
Oy, he's not one of the prophets. The Kai is looking out the window quietly, and Kira asks if something is wrong. And she says very simply that she's contemplating prophecy. They talk about how the wormhole can be seen from this vantage point, and it's quite a spectacular sight, but it can only be seen when a ship enters or exit, and there's nothing scheduled to come through. A shame, she says. Then she turns and looks at Sisko. He kind of smiles, and he calls O'Brien, asking him to prepare the Yangtze Qiang for lunch.
This made me think of, like, your grandmother manipulating you into doing something with a, "Oh, wouldn't it be nice if..."
It would sure be nice if I could see the wormhole open. I came all this way.
I like the way Sisko is taking this whole thing in his stride.
Yes.
He's just very, you know, matter of fact with this whole thing. There's a level of comfort with Sisko in this situation, which is sort of very, it seems very diplomatic.
Well, he understands her significance.
Yeah.
And also they've got some whole thing, some whole connection from the ear touching.
Well, and it led directly to the prophets.
Please refer to episode one. He says, "Major Kira and I are taking the Kai through the wormhole." Kira looks very pleased. "Thank you, Kai Opaka," Naomi Osaka says. And then Bashir looks all hurt that he wasn't invited. He says he's having a slow day. And Sisko's like, "Okay, fine, you can come." He's such a baby. Go do your own job.
I think this is a little bit of a turning point for Bashir. We're starting to see this character being far less arrogant than we have before. I would expect the way we saw him portrayed earlier, he would just expect to go. "Well, of course I'm going through. I'm Dr. Bashir." Whereas we're seeing sort of a change in that of him, like, asking to go along.
I hope so, because he's been unbelievably annoying up until now. I would really like to see him turned into a human, I guess.
And I think this is somewhat typical of everything on Deep Space Nine. It really is, in my opinion, a slow burn show.
Yeah, and I obviously gave up when it was still slowly burning before it got good.
Yeah.
I responded to somebody on Twitter, I think it was just this morning, it might have been yesterday, I don't remember, but they were talking about how, you know, amazing Deep Space Nine is, and it's the best Star Trek. And I'm like, oh, I hope that I feel that eventually, because I'm certainly not there yet. But the fact that so many people think that encourages me to keep going.
Yes.
But there's no doubt that we have seen so many stereotypical characters in these first, you know, 11 episodes.
I would use the phrase becomes a great show.
Fair enough. But to most people, it's in the past.
Yeah.
And for me, it's new.
Which is really cool.
Yeah. When they approach the shuttle, O'Brien and a Bajoran NPC come out. The Bajoran bows to the Kai, and Miles says the ship is ready for departure. He's carrying tools. They always make such an effort to convince you that he's working. It just cracks me up. Sleeves rolled up. I got my tools.
I'm surprised he doesn't have a few oil patches on his face or some dirt on his uniform.
Oh, why don't they do that? Yeah. That would be funny because there's no dirt in the future.
Oh, right.
Miles does a little respectful bow and calls her ma'am. She approaches him and says, "You have a child, don't you?" He says, "I do. I have a little girl." She takes off her necklace and hands it to Miles. She says, "Would you give this to her for me?" Miles looks very confused, but Cisco just smiles at him and they all get on the shuttle. Miles kind of looks at the necklace and I didn't think he looked really thrilled about it, but I guess this isn't somebody that he really knows. Yeah. I guess he just knows that she's important.
Yeah, he just sort of looked confused of like, okay, thank you.
Yeah, what am I supposed to do with this?
Yeah.
But I imagine that there was some kind of important meaning to this action. We don't cover it in this episode. Maybe it comes up again later, but it was interesting. I mean, she could have just as easily given the necklace to the Bajoran guy who bowed to her, who probably knows more about her, but she didn't. She gave it to Miles. So cue the theme song, and now we go into the theme. I'm back a little bit to feeling like the theme song is long because now I'm no longer typing just directly on my iPad, and I'm typing it into a Bluetooth keyboard so I can type so much faster. So now I'm just like, type, 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 type. Oh, and here's the theme song. And then I sit through the whole theme song.
Do you sit through the theme song when you actually watch the show?
I didn't this time. Oh. I have every other time. I have this thing about hearing the theme song over and over. It's one of the reasons why I don't like to binge shows.
Oh.
Because I will get so sick of the theme song. Now, of course, on a lot of the platforms, like on Netflix, you can just skip it.
Yeah, I'll admit, I probably skip 90% of them. I'll watch it once in a while just sort of to remind myself of it.
Yeah. The whole reason I'm not cut out to binge is this. I like the theme song. I like to watch the opening credits and stuff because I feel like that gets me into the right mind space to watch the show. But if I have to hear it over and over and over in binging, I get so incredibly sick of it, I never want to watch the show again. So this is a circle that stops me from enjoying binging things.
Oh.
Yeah, that was a very useless piece of information for anybody who's not me. There it is.
If we get short for time, we can always cut.
Sure, you can cut the things that are deeply important to me. That's fine.
Your reason for not binging is deeply important.
It is binging. The name of this podcast is Rebinge, which is a word I made up.
You are the best. Just pointing that out.
Okay.
I probably won't cut that.
In the shuttle, the Kai thanks them for indulging her, and Kira says, "Not at all, Opaka. You honor us with your presence." Every time they referred to her as Opaka, I thought that was weird. Isn't it her last name? Is it her first name? If they just called her Naomi, I would have known, but...
I do like the fact we're getting a lot of visual effects in this episode. I think we've seen more visual effects than we've seen in any of them. I mean, we get the full wormhole, we get the shuttle. Honestly, I never tire of this.
Sisko calls Dax and says that they will return at 1400 hours. "Here we go," he says, as they enter the wormhole. And then they exit out on the other side, and Bashir says, "Spectacular, isn't it?" And the Kai is clearly impressed. "More than I imagined," she says. Sisko is also quite pleased with himself, saying that that was his smoothest ride through the wormhole yet. Which, okay, whatever. I mean, there's no establishment of what that means.
You know, that's a good point, because in Captor Pursuit, Miles talks about the wormhole being kind of rough and it can bang up a ship. And in episode one, it wasn't terribly rough. And in this one, it's terribly rough. So we've never really seen a bad transition through the wormhole.
Bashir is pointing out the sights as they come out of the wormhole, and Opaka says, "A doorway into the unknown." And Sisko says, "It's the other side of the galaxy. The Gamma Quadrant is 70,000 light years from Bajor, and their fastest starship would take 67 years to get here without the wormhole." It seems like this is a pretty big trip for the first time you leave home for Opaka.
Oh, yeah.
Then he says that she'll see the value of the wormhole to Bajor in a few years, because it's not obvious yet. And she says, "If that is to be my fate, Commander," which is definitely ominous. We don't know what exactly is going on, but she definitely is looking for something on this trip. There's some specific reason why she wanted to take it.
Well, she also mentions prophecy for the second time at this point. Why doesn't somebody ask her what the prophecy is?
I know, nobody asks her.
Yeah, I mean, maybe the prophecy was really obvious, like, if a Kai flies through the wormhole, they die. I mean, that would have been a bad one.
Yeah, it does seem like... somebody could have brought it up.
Yeah.
Then they would have known what, you know, exactly what they were getting into. And Sisko does say he doesn't understand what she's talking about. And she says, never mind, you can return. And she seems a little bit irked, like maybe she misread whatever this prophecy was.
Whatever the prophecy said. If you take the Kai through the wormhole, everybody but the Kai dies horribly.
Yeah, that they might want to know that.
Yeah.
Kira is about to turn around when the sensors pick up a narrowband subspace signal. It's just a long stream of statistical data requesting a reply, but there isn't one. Sisko says to launch a probe and they can check on it later, but Opaka is like, why not investigate now? And she puts her hand on Sisko's shoulder and says, please, Commander, I don't get out often.
Or at all, actually.
There's Grandma manipulating again.
Yep.
So Sisko asks for the source and says they'd better take a look. Kira has found the origin, but not the source of the signal. Sisko presses a few buttons. Kira's pressing a few buttons. Hand wave, hand wave. And he says, there's a network of artificial satellites around a moon, and one is malfunctioning and unstable. Bashir says there are life forms localized in 12 square kilometers on the moon's surface. They may be humanoid, but he can't resolve the biopatterns because of interference. Whenever it's too hard for the story, we always have some reason why we can't do the science thing.
Yeah.
Sisko says to go in a little closer, but Kira says they're being scanned by one of the satellites and she doesn't like it because it's heading towards them. Then there's a power buildup, 600 megawatts, 900. Uh-oh.
Why didn't you run away as soon as the satellite started moving towards you? Yeah, there's a satellite moving, scanning us and then moving towards us. Run away.
They were too busy reading the megawatts. And then it's firing on them, of course. And they do the standard, something's firing on the ship, shake up. And then the shields are down already. Thrusters are gone and we're losing power. That was probably not a great idea to approach this moon.
Have you noticed pretty much everything that seems to come from the Gamma Quadrant is like one shot, takes out their shields, they're done.
Yeah, but we keep going there.
Yeah.
I think they would have been better off closing down the wormhole.
Maybe they could work on some technology to counter the fact that everything in the Gamma Quadrant seems to be able to take out their shields.
Now impulse generators are failing and we're heading down to the surface. They're heading into some heavy dark clouds and Sisko says, check contingency fuel cell output and asks Bashir to watch the hull temperature. The shuttle is filling with smoke as the temperature is at 900 C. That seems hot. Then it's 950. Then it's 1100. And as they're going down, they show Kai Opaka and she looks like she's more and more excited as they're about to crash. Sisko ejects the antimatter pod as the temperature keeps rising. And then they brace for impact as the screen goes black and the closed caption says, crashing.
Crash landing.
I guess we couldn't quite afford the full crash effect.
That was something I noticed as well. It was like, screen goes black, lots of crashing noises.
And then they're crashed.
Yeah, they used up their VFX budget in just having the shuttle going through the wormhole and the other effects to this point.
Which were great effects. And then, we didn't have any more
left. I appreciate all the visual effects that they do in this show.
We didn't have any Odo changing in this episode either. So you'd think we could have saved a little money for the crash.
Oh, yeah.
Well, now the shuttle is on the ground and there are some little explosions going on around it. Sisko is climbing out of a small hole and coughing and Bashir comes out next and then they help the Kai out and they're carrying her with her hands like straight up in the air. They lay her on the ground and her eyes are wide open and Bashir says pulmonary collapse. Her upper thoracic vertebrae have been crushed. And well, with someone with thoracic vertebrae problems of my own, I can confirm that's not good. Bashir tells Sisko to hold Kira back because Kira is trying to come at the Kai. She's shouting, stay with us, Opaka. I don't think she wants to be responsible for the loss of the Kai on her one and only trip off of Bajor. But then again, this seems like what the Kai was planning.
Yeah, there was something else behind it.
Yeah. Bashir starts giving her CPR, but she dies. And so we've had this whole big thing about the Kai, but she's only been in two episodes and now she's dead, which is pretty shocking. And Kira is devastated and she starts sobbing and she throws herself onto the Kai. Bashir and Sisko just watch.
Kira is very emotional and very saddened by what's happened here. It's interesting that somebody who's been a complete badass to this point and very much in control of their emotions, and she's so visibly upset by the death of the Kai. I mean, she is just, you know, sobbing at the loss of this figure.
The great thing about female characters who are badasses is they can also still be female. That's a thing I quite appreciate.
Yeah. I guess that's sort of showing that there is this underlying Kira. There is still this empathy and emotion.
I don't know if empathy is the emotion. I mean, it certainly could be. I view it a little bit more as, you know, she is a very volatile person and sometimes, many times, it comes out as anger. But in this particular case, that volatility is coming out as grief.
Ah, that's a good point.
It's actually a very intricate story about her that comes out sort of in this episode, yes, which we haven't gotten to all that yet. But I can see how she is so emotionally connected to the Kai and what the Kai represents, because she feels like all of her freedom fighting from the past has been basically in protection of and in service of the Kai.
Yeah.
So of course, when she's going to feel responsible for whatever happened to her, of course she's going to have a bit of a volcano, because that's what she is. She is a volcano. You just don't know what's going to come out. In this case, it's tears.
Oh, that's a really good way of putting it. I mean, she is, yeah, she has that volatility, but the volatility we've seen to that point has been towards anger.
Yes.
Nice.
And I'm happy to see it's not just towards anger.
Yeah. And I think my final point with Kira and why this scene was so jarring was this was a woman who'd been a freedom fighter. So she must have seen a lot of deaths and there must have been a lot of killing. And she actually, I think, talked about that in one of the previous episodes. So seeing her so emotional with the Kai, I thought was really interesting for the character of somebody who, for most of their life, their business was death.
Yes, I think it's different in this case because this is the thing that she was fighting for.
Yeah.
And now she's just watched it sort of senselessly die in front of her.
Interesting.
When we were talking about recording this episode, you said, oh, this will probably be quick to record this because there's really not that much to talk about. And I didn't say this to you then, but I was going, I feel like I have a lot to say about this episode and about this particular, maybe not this exact scene, but yeah, about
the scenes later,
what we learned about scenes. Kira. Yeah, in this entire episode.
I think I meant not a lot to talk about in terms of the actual episode.
It's true. There's not really much detail even of each scene. There's some just goofball scenes as we go. Yes.
Well, the episode is actually, I would argue the episode is actually quite well written and very self-contained and doesn't contain a huge amount of hand-wavy stuff.
There's a little of it later, but yeah, not too much.
Yeah, not too much. If we contrast it with last week's episode where there seemed to be, you know, they were prepared to drive a tractor over the script just to force things through.
I still like that episode.
I know you did. Well, because it was character development and you like character development.
Yeah. So Kira is now saying what seems to be a prayer over Kai Opaka and Naomi Osaka. And then some unfriendly looking armed beings appear from around a rock. And we go to a commercial. All right, we're back on the station now, and Odo is coming into ops, and he's asking if there has been any contact from Sisko. Dax says no, and Odo's a little frantic because they're 3 hours late, and he says Opaka's people are calling him every 5 minutes. Miles says to tell them that one of the runabouts found traces of a warp eddy current, which has to be from their ship. Dax says they can probably trace the ship with that. Odo says they're already freaking out that he took the Kai into the wormhole at all. And Miles is like, we're doing everything we can. And Dax suggests maybe the Bajorans could station a ship on the Gamma Quadrant side of the wormhole so that they can stay in close touch with them.
I'm expecting Odo is probably very upset with all the calls he's getting. I doubt one of his skills is being able to fend calls from angry Bajorans.
Oh, yeah. He does not want to be answering the phone. No. He's a typical introvert. He does not want to be talking to people. He'd rather just get an email.
I imagine they keep on calling. It's like, is she back yet? Is she back yet? No. No.
Yeah. And he has no info. Well, he should put one of the NPCs on
it. Yeah.
Answer the phone. Sit over there and answer the phone every time they call. Just say no. Now we're in a cave on the planet, moon, whatever, wherever we've crashed. I think it was a moon. And
it was
someone
a moon.
Is sharpening the blade of a battle axe. And they drag Sisko, Kira, and Bashir into the cave. They look like dirty Klingons without the Klingon ridges on their heads.
They're a very grubby-looking motley crew.
For sure. The head guy says, oh, our first visitors. You're not all the same race. Isn't that the guy from Hill Street Blues? That's what I wrote down. And it is. It's Jonathan Banks. This guy has been in nearly 200 things when you look at IMDb. They do not mess around with low-rent guest stars on this show. They're serious actors that they bring on. I like that.
It's funny how many things Jonathan Banks has been in.
Yeah. Sisko introduces himself and everyone else. And when he introduces Bashir as a doctor, the dude laughs and he says, a doctor, how ironic. He then says he's Galen Shellaw, leader of the Ennis, and he asks why they are here. Sisko says they crashed when one of the satellites attacked them. He says, they are explorers who recently discovered a wormhole from our quadrant of the galaxy to yours. Shella says, you know nothing of our home planet? You know nothing of the punishment? Uh-oh. Sisko says they don't know anything. They've just begun to explore the area. Then Kira suddenly shouts out in pain, grabbing her shoulder, and she falls to her knees. She says she's all right, but she's obviously not, and Sisko helps her up, and then Bashir asks for his medical case. And at first, somebody with a gun stops him, but eventually they let him have the case.
I'm sure Kira is one of those people who are like, I'll just walk it off, it's fine.
Right. And then Shella apologizes for their cautious nature and says, if you haven't realized, we're at war. Sisko asks who they're fighting, and he says a brutal enemy that attacks at whim. We have to maintain a constant vigil. He holds up Sisko's phaser and says the Ennis stopped using energy weapons a century ago because they're not damaging enough. So battle axes do more damage than an energy weapon? Okay.
I think they're talking about the physical damage that one of those things would do of like hacking and ripping somebody apart, because I think this is part of the arc of this story of these have become really brutal people.
I guess we will learn more as we go. Shella says, all of your lives are in danger because of your very presence here. It'll make it seem like we're allies. Then he shows Sisko some injured people and says, these are the latest victims of the enemy, the Noel Ennis. They have no doctors. They were thrust into the situation with no resources. And he says, maybe they'll be able to help each other. Meanwhile, Kira is inconsolable. Bashir is trying to help her physically, but she's pretty broken over the Kai. And she says, it's all so senseless. Opaka has always been a symbol of hope. Her words gave our struggle meaning, and now she's dead. Her life ends on some unknown moon, and for what?
She gives a very convincing performance here.
Yeah.
She really genuinely seems to just be despondent about what's happened to the Kai and the effect it will have on her people.
She views the Kai as this beacon of hope, and part of the reason why she has done all the things that she did as a freedom fighter were because she so strongly believed in the Kai and what the Kai stood for.
Yeah, oh, that's interesting, because I was looking at it as the Kai as embodied in that person, that Opaka was this real symbol, not just the Kai.
Except for the fact that I don't think Kira has ever met Opaka in person before.
Oh.
So I don't know that she would really have any kind of a personal thing about her as I was going to say human, but she's not human, as a fellow Bajoran.
Yeah.
So to me, it was more about that she was the symbol of the thing that she was fighting for and, you know, risking her life for and doing things that she wasn't proud of, as she said in one of those episodes.
Oh, good point, because I guess that was from the first episode that she doesn't see anyone.
Right, or leave Bajor.
Yeah.
Sisko tells Shella that Bashir will help, but they can't take sides in the battle. Bashir says maybe he can train some of the Ennis just to help, like I think he said in field triage.
Yeah.
He says he still needs to run a scan on Kira's shoulder when they get back to DS9, but that she'll be okay. And Sisko tells him not to count on a quick rescue, which seems like sage advice.
Good advice when you're in a different quadrant of the universe and you didn't send out any kind of signal saying where you were going.
Then there's an explosion outside and some soldiers run in firing weapons. The closed caption said commotion.
It's a full attack. They're shooting everyone.
The guys attacking look like rebels in Star Wars with their hats. A bunch of the guys get shot. Kira can't take the bad shooting anymore, and she dives out from behind the rocks and shoots the ceiling, which drops rocks on the attackers. The ones who didn't get crushed run out.
It did not look like it was going very well for the Ennis. They were all just getting shot.
They were like jumping out in front of the guns, and it was ridiculous.
But action Kira, as usual, she actually has to do something rather than be very passive in that situation.
Yes, even injured.
Yes. Yeah. I'm going to add to that, not bad for a minor figure in the Resistance who just ran errands.
Right. Well, a bunch of them were injured or killed anyway, because there's a bunch of bodies lying everywhere.
I think you're understating that one. They're surrounded by bodies.
From both sides.
Yeah.
The attackers and the attacked. Everybody's just lying around dead. I think there's only a few of them left alive.
I think all the Ennis were killed in that attack.
Yeah, it was bad. Which is why Kira jumped out and tried to save the day.
Yeah.
So then they show these dramatic shots of all the bodies on the ground. And as they show that, they turn to sort of the mouth of the cave, and in walks Kai Opaka to some very dramatic lighting and music. And we go to an ad break. Dun, dun, dun.
Is that not classic Star Trek?
I don't know. Having somebody come back from the dead, that's not super classic Star Trek, is it? I guess it happens.
I mean more the closing.
Yeah. The drama. After the ad break, bodies are being dragged around. Bashir is checking Kai Opaka's vital signs, saying everything is normal. He's a little bamboozled by this whole thing. Sisko asks Opaka if she knows what happened. She said she closed her eyes when they crashed. She felt the impact and a wall of heat pass through her, but then nothing. Sisko tells her they pulled her from the wreckage after the crash, but she was, and he doesn't say it, but she says, dead. Then she gets up and looks around before stepping away from them with Kira.
I'm pretty sure this isn't the first time that Kira has been surrounded by bodies everywhere.
Yeah, she didn't seem too impacted by that, but she was definitely impacted by seeing Kai Opaka come through the door. Bashir says that Opaka seems to be normal, but her physiology has been radically altered. He says the tricorder indicates some kind of biomechanical presence at a cellular level. He doesn't know what it is, but it seems to be directly controlling her metabolic processes. He says if the runabout's computer were functioning, he could run a full analysis.
That's interesting. She didn't remember much, except she was dead.
Kira calls for Sisko, saying, over here, another one of the dead bodies is coming back to life. Oh, interesting. This place is weird. Zombies everywhere.
Shoot them in the head.
Others are starting to get up as well, and Sisko is looking around, very confused. But it does explain why Kai Opaka and Naomi Osaka got up, because they're all getting up.
It's interesting. They didn't leave much of a gap for you to speculate or wonder what was going on. It was just, boom, Kai Opaka appears and they all start waking up.
Well, the show is short. You got to keep moving.
Yeah.
Dax and Miles now are in a shuttle and they're not having much luck finding any sign of the missing runabout. Miles is annoyed that there's not even any sign of their transponder signal. He says the warp eddy has traces of meson particle emissions, so they're on the right track. It's leading them into an uncharted binary star system.
It's nice to see more special effects. This episode seems to have more scenes of shuttles flying and the wormhole than I think anything we've seen so far.
Right. Back in the cave, Bashir is finding similar mysterious readings in the others coming back to life. Shella, who was dead, is now standing next to Bashir, and Bashir is saying every cell is showing signs of the biomechanical process.
Yeah.
Sisko asks Shella if he's died before, and he says more times than he can count, which I guess is why he said, oh, a doctor, how ironic.
I must admit, I do like the way he delivers his lines. He has this sort of deadpan style.
Yeah.
It's reminiscent of, I watched him in Better Call Saul, and he has almost the same kind of delivery style of this sort of just very flat, I'm not getting excited.
Bashir asks if he can return to the runabout and get the computer running. Sisko says it's too dangerous, but Bashir says this could be an unprecedented discovery and he really needs to get some info. Shella says he'll protect him. And then Sisko looks over at Opaka, who is tying a bandage around someone's head, and he nods that it's okay. I mean, he'll just come back, so maybe if you lose a limb or something or just get hurt, you're still hurt. We're not sure what the rules are yet, but Bashir has never been that bright anyway, so who knows?
I think it's telling that Bashir is actually interested in the medical science at work here. I mean, he's actually prepared to risk his life to get back to the shuttle so they can gain some understanding of what this is. Despite the flaws in the character that we've seen to this point, Bashir is actually interested in doing something that could be genuinely helpful. He isn't trying to hide. He isn't going, oh, well, you know, it could be interesting, but it's too dangerous.
Or he's just so focused on the fact that this could be, as he said, an unprecedented discovery that he's not really even thinking about whether or not it's safe or not.
That's also a good point.
Because, you know, I kind of think he's a dope. There's no women for him to creep on here, so he's bored in the cave.
Well, the second in command for Shellar is that woman.
Yeah, I'm not sure she's his type.
She has a lot of scars, looks kind of grubby.
Yeah. And she's quite armed. Then Bashir heads off, but Shella doesn't go with him. Shella says he'd like to know more about the breakthrough himself. The doctor's acting like he's seen a miracle, but he says if you've lived with it as long as we have, you'd see it more as a curse. Sisko asks how long they've been here, and Shella says it feels like an eternity. That's all part of the punishment. Sisko says, what is this punishment? And Shella says, everything here is designed to prolong suffering.
Oh, so it's kind of like what Deep Space Nine does to Miles.
Prolong his suffering. Nice.
Everything breaks down, he has to do everything, and now he's running the school.
Endless cycle of things that are broken.
Exactly.
Sisko asks what his crime was, obviously trying to figure out if it's okay to side with him.
Which prison gang does he join?
Oh, dear. Shella says the Ennis and the Nol Ennis are ancient enemies. They fought the same wars for generations. Finally, they sent us all here and told us that we would serve as an example for the rest of civilization. I'm not sure that makes any sense. Just stop fighting then. I don't understand that at all.
Well, I think part of the idea here is that the war is ingrained. It's not just become a dispute between who has which land or access to which resources. It's become a cultural war.
Yeah, but it's very hard to relate to it, especially since you just keep coming back. So you can't win the war. So what's the point? Just go off on some other field and build a house and live there. Who cares?
But I think that's the point they're trying to make here, that these two sides in this war have become so entrenched, they don't see any other option than fighting because it's become that, well, it's what we always do.
Yeah, it's just hard to relate to.
Yeah.
Kaiopaka overhears this conversation and she steps in, asking how the fight began. Shella says, some say it was water, some say it was land, it's not relevant now. So we couldn't even think of a reason for the conflict. Come on. I mean, he could have just said land. Why did he say, some say it's water, some say it's land? It's so stupid.
Oh, no, I disagree. I think that's very much the point. These people don't care. The reasons for fighting this war have become secondary to the very act of fighting and killing the Nol Ennis.
But is there something in this constant reincarnation that stops them from evolving so they can't ever make different decisions and they're just stuck in a loop? Because if, I mean, we don't know, they don't say that it's been years or decades or whatever, but geez, even after a couple months, you'd be like, oi, what's the point?
Well, I kind of think we come on to that later in the show.
Okay, well then let's keep going. Kaiopaka asks, what's to gain by continuing to fight? And he says, vengeance. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
We've all seen our family suffer at the hands of the Nol. Kira, annoyed, jumps in. If you insist on fighting this war, at least learn to fight it more effectively. She's like, there were no guards at the entrance when we arrived. You have no system to alert your forces of an attack. You people are obviously unprepared for fighting in close quarters. Sisko tries to stop her. He doesn't want to be seen as taking sides. But she's like, we're trapped here, and only his forces to protect us from damnation, which is a interesting choice of words. She's like, we have to defend ourselves to stay alive.
She just ignores him and just carries straight on with her military planning. I mean, I thought it was fascinating the way she went straight into that mode.
Yeah, a few minutes ago, she was inconsolable, and now she's so angry again. She says, we have to be ready, but Sisko yells, that's enough. She keeps right on going until Kaiopaka says, this is not your war, Kira.
I thought it was great the way, again, Kira was portrayed here. And she had clearly this on switch that could switch from, you know, grieving and being upset about the death, potential death or what happened, now into a military mode where she can start fighting again. And I think this is a real pointer to the life that she's led, that she can go back into that mode at a moment's notice. And even to the point of she's ignoring Sisko. It doesn't matter what you want. We're now at war. This is what we have to do.
Think how many times we've touched on PTSD in these first 11 episodes.
Yeah.
It's really interesting when you look at it that way because she was triggered. She went from one side of the spectrum of being just really upset about the Kai being dead and then shocked at her coming back, to way on the other side of the spectrum where she was ready to start shooting. And then these people are all stupid. You guys are doing it wrong. You need to be better fighters, blah, blah, blah. So it's interesting if you look at it that way.
I think that was just her training kicked in.
You and I are never going to look at Kira the same way. It's so interesting to me how you look at her.
I look at her reaction as she's somebody who's been a fighter. And this is a fighting situation. And that piece of her programming, and I use the word programming deliberately, that she clicks into that mode and that becomes the focus.
Well, you view her, I think, as a fighter, a survivor, and a badass. And I view her as damaged.
Interesting.
Yeah.
That's a fascinating take on her.
Partly because I want to view her as damaged because that's more interesting.
Well, you're right, because that is part of her character that actually comes out.
We're going to talk about this a lot because I mean, we haven't even really got to the big thing that happens with her. Yeah.
I look at the damage as independent from the training.
No.
The
impossible. She's not a super soldier.
No. Put it like this. I think you could have somebody trained in that situation, know how to react and be able to follow the book and do the various things, have it trained into them.
I think that's what pop culture wants you to believe. And I don't think it's true. But I also don't know because I can't relate.
Yeah,
I mean, didn't grow up that way.
Neither of us have ever been in combat. I've only read anecdotal and personal experiences of people who've been in combat. And some of it comes down to, I guess, different people react differently.
Sure.
you're right. You know, you never come away with it without some level of damage. And the question would be, what is that level of damage?
Well, we find out a little bit more later. Galinshella laughs and says, they used to defend themselves better, but then we realized it was pointless. When you cease to fear death, the rules of war change. You'll understand as the years begin to pass. It's like, oh man, that's depressing.
Talk about giving a grim view of the future.
Sisko says, that is not going to happen. Our rescue won't take that long. There's only 20 minutes left in the show, so I'm guessing it'll take about 20 minutes. That's not exactly what he said.
This is another point that sets the whole tone of the show. If you can't kill your enemy and they can't kill you, so there is no concept of even a defeat scenario, then the fighting simply becomes a decision based on it's something we've always done. It's pointless.
That's why I don't understand why you would keep doing it. It's a no-win scenario.
I think their point here is that these people are fighting because it's culturally ingrained into them.
It's like playing solitaire. I just keep thinking, if you can't win, what is the point? And to some degree, even if you can win, what is the point? And then I also had a bunch of thoughts about, have they tried things like chopping off heads? Do the heads grow back? I mean, have they tried other things, or do they just continue doing the same thing over and over? I mean, these people are idiots. At least form a strategy.
I think it's the fact that they're caught in this negative feedback loop.
Yeah.
They're not prepared to break it.
Ugh, so terrible. So Sisko says, they will find us, meaning the rescue mission, penetrate the defense net and transport us out of here. He says, we'd be willing to transport you all away from here if that's what you want. How that does not violate the Prime Directive, I do not know, but okay. Galinshella says, this is an ancient prayer to us. You would do this for us? For both sides, he says, after you leave, you can go wherever you want. Just stop fighting long enough for us to get off this moon. He says the leader of the Null will never agree to a ceasefire. Sisko tells him to set a meeting with the leader, whose name is Zelenko. That's a really difficult thing to pronounce. ZL, at least this is what the closed caption said. ZLANGCO, Zelenko.
Zelenko, that's a nice name.
Oh my gosh. Galinshella scoffs and says it's hopeless, but I will talk if he will.
I like how Sisko's playing the mediator here. He wants to stop the war, and he goes into this interesting mode of he's being very calm and very reasonable. We're seeing his skills at convincing Shella to talk to his bitter enemy. They've been fighting for what could be millennia.
Yeah, we don't know. We have no
idea. Yeah, we don't know. And Sisko manages to get him to talk with the promise of, we can get you off world.
Sometimes a new voice makes you maybe reconsider it or gives you a little hope.
I think that's it.
Plus, Sisko's very convincing.
Yeah.
I'd probably believe him. As long as he's not touching my ear, everything's okay.
He's not a Kai.
Then we go to the shuttle with Dax and Miles. They're still looking. Dax says the scans are being impacted by the star's abnormal levels of delta radiation, which, by the way, I Googled, not a thing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's a made-up Star Trek thing.
Oh, completely.
She says we'll have to survey each planet and moon one at a time. Plus, there's an asteroid belt, Miles says. Bloody needle in a haystack.
Miles does not look thrilled at the concept of navigating and mapping various planets and moons and an asteroid belt.
So true. He says we need a magnet to find a needle in a haystack. Runabout hulls are made up of metallic composites that interact with magnetic fields. We can send out some probes to scan the system for those specific magnetic resonance patterns. Oh, we've wandered into Star Trek technobabble. Stop typing all these words. That's what I typed into my notes.
Yeah, they threw a whole bucket of Star Trek technobabble.
Dax seems very dubious of this plan, probably because Miles just keeps doing things like, oh, I've got it, and he runs off and doesn't tell her what he's doing.
Yeah, Dax looks skeptical because she's just figured out that Miles basically is trying to shirk flying the ship.
She's left it to her.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, you fly the ship. I'm going to go and work on something at the back.
She knows it'll be fine. He's got his sleeves rolled up. He's probably got his tools somewhere. All the usual Miles things are in play.
Okay, I'll take that as an answer.
Oh, the whole thing was very Star Trek-y, technobabble-y. Yeah,
I did enjoy it.
Then we go back to the crash shuttle. Two dudes are standing outside the shuttle protecting Bashir, who's inside trying to fix the computer. This is not the guy I would trust to fix the computer, but he does manage to get it up and running. And he says, nice work, Julian, to himself. He's just such a, I don't even know what he is. I want to call him a name, and then I would have to change my explicit rating. I don't want to do that. Back in the cave, Galen Shelah comes in saying, Zelenko has agreed to listen to Sisko's proposal. They're meeting at a neutral site near the vessel with no weapons. Kira says, what if it's a trap? Galen Shelah says they've taken precautions, but if she wants to personally check the security, she can. Sisko says that Major Kira will be staying here with the Kai. He's trying to get her to not get too involved and take sides.
She is ready to go back to the freedom fighter.
She's ready to fight.
Yeah.
After they leave, Kai Opaka says, you can't bury it, Kira. Do you recognize yourself in these people? She says, not at all. They're content to die, and I've always fought to stay alive. Then she's worried that the Kai is the wrong impression of her. She says she's fought her entire life for a good cause, for our freedom, our independence. It was brutal and ugly, but it's over now. That's not who I am. I don't want you to think that I'm a violent person without a soul or a conscience. Then my least favorite thing happens. Kai Opaka touches her ear and Kira bursts into tears. You see what happens when you touch somebody's ear without their permission? Don't deny the violence inside of you, Kira. Only when you accept it can you move beyond it. And then she hugs Kira.
This was such a good scene.
Kira says she's known nothing but violence since she was a child. And Opaka says, in the eyes of the prophets, we are all children. Bajor has much to learn from peace. That is a really good line.
Yeah.
Kira, crying, says she's afraid the prophets won't forgive her. And Kai Opaka, Naomi Osaka, holds her chin in her hands and says, they're just waiting for you to forgive yourself. That was just a lovely scene. Really?
Oh, yeah.
Certainly the best written scene in this episode, maybe in several episodes. I really appreciated it. I thought they are trying to dig a little bit more into that damage that Kira has and try to understand that really brusque front that she puts up.
And I think as well, it also explains some of her reactions in this scene when she's thrust into a combat situation. If she's been fighting since she was a child, it would be so ingrained.
Yeah.
What you can see here is she's been hiding all that side of the war and sort of suppressing it of what she did and what was involved to win. I assume it was an extraordinarily bloody war. They don't really, I don't think they ever really address everything that happened.
Well, certainly not yet. I mean, all we have to go on is what we have seen so far.
Yeah.
Because that's all I know.
Clearly, Kira has these unresolved issues left over from the war. It makes me think of the scene from First Contact where Alfred Woodard says to Picard, you were enjoying it. Do you remember?
When he was shooting the Borg.
That made me think of the same thing here. Hmm. Of, is there part of this that Kira enjoyed because there was a, I wouldn't say a comfort, there was a predictability to it.
Well, you knew the enemy.
Yes.
I think as she moves into politics, it's much harder to know the enemy.
Right.
I don't know. I don't think we've had any real evidence that she felt like she enjoyed it. We've certainly had a lot of evidence that she's conflicted about it.
Yeah.
That she tries to justify everything that she did by saying we fought for Bajor, right? She never tries to say it was for herself. When we go back to past prologue, you know, she talks in that episode about not being proud of some of the things that she did.
Yeah.
So she was clearly never even comfortable with it, even though she kept trying to convince herself that she was doing it for the right reasons.
Yeah.
I have to say, this scene makes me really, really happy. This is the thing that makes me like any show, is when we try to go a little bit deeper.
Right.
I was a little concerned at the beginning when she went from, you know, just being the angry woman to being completely inconsolable and crying. And I was just like, uh-oh, are these the two levels of Kira? She is angry woman or she's hysterical woman. And, you know, I don't want to watch either one. That's not interesting to me. But instead, now we're trying to get a little bit deeper with her. And I really appreciate that. And I thought they brought this out really well. And I'm not sure it would have come out of her if it had been anyone else talking to her. But the Kai is such a symbol of what she fought for.
Yes. I mean, she's a big part of why Kira did the things that she did.
Yeah. Yeah. This is good. Okay. Back to the shuttle. And Dax and Miles are watching the hysteresis curve. Sure, whatever those words mean. Miles is complaining, but then, of course, the probe finds something just as he's about to give up. And Lwaxana Troi's voice appears saying there's a 0.0012 fluctuation in the stupid made-up curve. They set in a new course for the moon. Watch out. That's what got us into trouble in the first place. That's how I should take all my notes. That's how the whole thing should be. I need to work harder. Those are great notes. On the stupid made-up curve. That's funny. Okay. Then we go back to the moon, and a bunch of giant burning things are set up to, I guess, signal the ceasefire talks.
Yep.
They took time to build these little beacons.
They just look cool.
Yeah. Bashir comes out of the shuttle just as everyone arrives. He tells Sisko the computer is processing the data now, and he can already confirm that the microbes are artificial, rather like nanites.
Ah.
Nanites got us into all kinds of trouble on Next Gen.
Oh, yeah.
Bashir asks what all of this is about, meaning the beacons and all the people standing around, and Sisko says he's offering to transport them off the moon. Bashir says that sounds like a jailbreak. He says it in much too jolly of a tone, and Sisko says he doesn't need the Prime Directive interpreted for him. Whatever crimes they've committed, they've paid for 100 times over.
Well, I think he does, considering he's breaking the Prime Directive, as you pointed out earlier.
That's probably why he reacted so strongly. He says they've been altered somehow and abandoned by their world. I believe the Federation would recognize them as separate and unique. So he's trying to do a very specific interpretation.
Ooh,
I like it.
I do like that. It was a great way of Sisko sort of sidestepping the issue and saying, well, it doesn't apply in this situation, does it? Once again, political Sisko.
So my notes say, so shut up, Julian. Yes, sir, he says, I'll go check on my analysis. Good idea. Go back in the shuttle.
He is quite good at putting his foot in his mouth.
Oh, yeah.
Although I joke that Sisko's being political here. Do you think he's taking the more ethical approach, though?
I think he believes what he said. These guys have paid for whatever crimes they could have committed.
Yeah.
I think the part where he says they've been altered, I think that really bothers him. And
yeah.
He feels like if he could just get them off the planet and separate them, that they would go back to whatever lives they had before. I don't think he quite knows what he's getting into.
I like the way Sisko seemed to be bothered by this, to have trouble with it. I mean,
yeah.
And the way he felt that he couldn't leave a people in suffering. I mean, he could have hunkered down and said, oh, we'll just wait for the rescue. But he went to these lengths to try and help them to escape.
I think it also annoyed him that Bashir was being sort of flippant about it.
Oh, yeah.
Because, you know, Bashir's annoying. The whole time he's probably wishing, why did I bring this idiot with?
I think you're right. I think there is an aspect to it of that. Bashir has a little bit of a cavalier attitude, which grates on Sisko.
And I think it shows up a couple of times in the previous episodes.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Also, all those times when Miles rolls his eyes or ignores him, none of them quite know what to do with Bashir. He's like a goody two-shoes, too smart, but then also creeping in all the girls.
I think Sisko sees him as like just an annoying junior officer who just needs to be molded into a better officer.
Maybe a bit like a kid.
Yeah.
Sisko's got more experience with raising a kid than
with
Miles
doing
does.
That.
Yeah. Now we see Zelenko. Sisko introduces himself, saying that the Federation is a group of over 100 planets who have allied themselves for mutual scientific, cultural, and defensive benefits. The mission we are on is to explore the galaxy. I thought, thank you very much for that explanation. That was quite lovely.
Zelenko is the keeper of the big hair on this world.
Yes, we get a bad wig in every episode, and now we have this episode's bad wig.
You've made me look for it now.
Oh, man, now that's another category we need. We need to add the category of the bad wig. Yes, Zelenko has it. Zelenko kind of mocks him. There will be no reward for our release, you know. Then he and Galen Shella get into a very dull pissing match. Sisko steps in between them. If you've had enough of this, enough suffering, then make your leader stop. I'm not here to mediate, but if you want an alternative, I'll give you one. He says, when our rescue party arrives, I can get you off this moon if both sides cooperate until then. Galen Shella tells Zelenko they will resettle us on different planets. But Zelenko doesn't trust this because he feels Sisko has chosen to ally himself with Galen Shella. Sisko says, we've done no such thing. But he points out that Kira fired at one of his people, which is exactly why Sisko didn't want her doing that.
Yeah.
Self-defense, Sisko says. Zelenko says, you are lying, and this is an Ennis trick. If the Ennis bring all of their people out of hiding first, he'll believe it's not a trick. He's even dumber than the first guy.
Yeah, I'd say he's even more paranoid.
Shella laughs. Then there is some spitting and some stabbing, and a bunch of idiots go down. So this no weapon thing that they said was going to happen, that never happened. They're all armed. Lots of stabbing and fighting. Galen Shella is dead again. Someone is about to hit Sisko with a knife as Bashir pokes his head out of the shuttle. He jumps on Sisko, rescuing him, and says, I've discovered we can't afford to die here, not even once.
Well, this is an improvement because the last time Bashir got in a fight, he got his ass kicked.
Well, he didn't really get in a fight here. He just knocked Sisko out of the way. Meanwhile, Miles is looking at the satellite system protecting the moon. they are scanned. Miles suddenly increases orbital altitude, saying a broadband damping field is the only thing that could block the shuttle's transponder. Those satellites are probably blocking the signal, and maybe they had something to do with the missing runabout. Hooray!
I like the way Miles and Dax are smart enough to get out the way when the satellites start coming towards them.
Yeah, right? Kira didn't do that. Then they show the computer screen that has a bunch of flashing circles on it, and Miles says, see, they're putting out a mutual induction field that would block 99% of all transmissions to and from the surface.
They've engaged full technobabble.
Back to the planet, and we got piles of bodies again. What a bunch of morons.
Once again, the team is surrounded by bodies.
Start chopping heads off. That will stop them from getting up.
Haven't they watched any zombie movies in the future?
I don't think so. Shoot the head. Bashir is scanning the body, saying that once the microbes have restored a body after death, the body is dependent upon them, and they'll only work in this environment. So removing them from this planet will kill them. Sisko suddenly realizes that includes the Kai.
Yeah. So these things must be pretty clever if they can figure out, you know, how the body is damaged and how to repair it. That's some pretty high-end technology there.
If Bashir were really smart, he would get a few samples of that and take that back to Deep Space Nine.
Right.
Because he doesn't have to get it from one of the Null Ennis or the Ennis. He can just get it from the Kai.
Yeah, that's true. The other side of it is even if those things, the microbes, with their, however they've been manipulated, die, he'd still actually have a template to look at.
Right. Then, hooray, Miles is calling. Dax asks if everyone is all right, and Sisko says they're alive, but the Yangtze Kiang was destroyed. He asks if they can be beamed up, and Miles says not until they find a way to penetrate the satellite network. As this conversation is going on, the bodies are coming back to life around Sisko. He warns Dax and Miles to stay away from the satellites. Then he says, let me know before you attempt to beam us up, because obviously he wants to warn them about the Kai.
Clearly, Miles and Dax are smart enough to know you avoid killer satellites and to locate crash chips. Send them on all missions.
Sisko turns to Bashir and says, we have to talk to the Kai. Once inside the cave, they tell Kira and Opaka that neither side took the ceasefire seriously. The Kai says, well, I'm not at all surprised. Then she looks at Kira and says, you were right. They don't know how to do anything else but die. They've forgotten how to live. Again, a great line.
Yeah.
Sisko tells him the Rio Grande is in orbit, trying to figure out how to get them out. Before he can tell Kai Opaka about the microbes, she says, I'll be staying, Commander. This is the answer to all of the prophecies in my life. And Kira is like, what?
Yeah.
This is the wrong thing. Opaka says, I don't know how or why, but when we came through the wormhole, I knew I wouldn't be returning. She says, Kira must tell our people that I have answered the call of the prophets. I was brought here because it was time for these people to begin their healing process, just as you were brought here to begin yours.
It is her destiny.
I do hope this begins a healing process with Kira and that this isn't just a one-time thing in the episode that doesn't change her in any way.
No, they really build on the character of Kira.
Oh, lovely. On the shuttle, Miles is saying, we just need to find a way to make a gap in the net. Dax suggests shooting one of the satellites, but Miles, you'd think it was Kira. Start shooting. But Miles says they're probably prepared for that. Shoot one and the rest may swoop up like Vian hornflies. The heck is that? He says they need something simpler.
I believe they are hornflies from the planet Vian.
Sure. Then he has a light bulb moment. We also need a sound effect for the light bulb moment of the episode. I need to make a list of all these things we need to do. And he calls Sisko. Sisko says only three of us are coming back. Kai Opaka is remaining on the planet. They don't look thrilled with that because they know how upset Odo is going to be. And Dax asks him to confirm. He says he'll explain later. Miles says they just need a few minutes to be ready.
Yeah. I like the way Dax asked, you're not bringing the Kai back?
Yeah. Odo is going to murder you. Gal and Shela, back alive again, asks if they're leaving. And Bashir explains that if they left the moon, they would die. So there's no end, Shela says. Bashir says he's finding himself in a moral dilemma. Maybe they can help end the suffering. He says, anything that has been programmed can be reprogrammed. Maybe I could disable the mechanism in the microbe so that they would stop bringing them back to life. Gal and Shela jumps in. Please, that's the only solution left. Give us a way to reprogram the microbes and it will end the war. Kira scoffs. The fear of death has never ended any other war. He says, no, but it will allow us to finally win and wipe out the Null for good. He says, your disabled microbes would be the ultimate weapon. Yeah, they're not getting it.
This reinforces again the point he's a complete zealot. His first reaction on this is, oh, can we use it as a weapon against our enemies? He's so engrossed in this war, even things that would benefit him and his people on the planet are irrelevant.
Yeah, he doesn't even understand why he's fighting. He just knows he can't stop.
Yeah, or what they're fighting over or anything.
Could be land, could be water,
yeah.
Could be microbes, maybe it's sky.
Like I said, this is the whole point of the episode. What they're doing is pointless.
Yeah. If this show came out in 2020,
yeah,
I feel like the soldiers would have chosen to die, because for some reason, we have these stories this year where people seem to need to choose death, and then that somehow makes their life have meaning. But in 93, it was like, nope, this is going to be the greatest weapon ever made. That sounds right. That sounds right. Miles calls and says they're ready. Some sign stuff happened, but essentially they have drawn one of the satellites out of position with a probe because it chased after the probe to destroy it. And they opened a little hole and now they can beam them away.
Dax seemed amusingly happy when the probe was destroyed.
Well, she's better the probe than her.
Yeah, I like the little computer graphics display that they had, the little animation showing the probe and zap, the satellite got it.
Right. Before they beam away, Sisko tells the Kai, if they ever find a way to rescue her, they will. But she says, my work is here now, Commander. Then she says, but your path and mine will cross again. Sisko smiles and does a little bow before they're beamed away, and they leave behind Naomi Osaka. The end.
Fade to black. Wow. Well, that was kind of an interesting episode.
Well, shall we enter the over-analysis section of the episode? Do you have something that you would like to say?
There are several things I'd like to say on this one.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things is the Kai's reference to the prophecy. I mean, apart from maybe they could have asked the Kai about that, that might have saved a lot of time and effort.
That's probably not a thing that she would do, though, tell them about the prophecy that she felt applied to her.
Oh, that's a good point. Because they might not take her, and then the prophecy wouldn't be fulfilled. But she definitely seems to see her destiny is helping these people.
Yes.
Now, she also said that Kira being on that planet was part of her healing. So was Kira part of the prophecy?
Well, we don't know. She doesn't say.
What that makes me wonder is, so the Kai knew of Kira, or knew that Kira needed to be saved from herself?
Maybe. If there's some kind of a future for Kira that we don't know about.
Oh, there's a great future for Kira.
You're not supposed to know that when you watch this episode. I'm not sure the writers knew that when they wrote this episode.
Yeah, I'd love to know how much the writers actually had planned in the overall story arc.
I think it's a safe bet that the prophecy was about her just helping someone on this moon.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, which is what she's doing.
I might cut that whole thing out. That was not a useful interjection.
No.
Any other over? Thanks. Thanks for the judgment.
I was just agreeing with you saying, no, you wanted to cut it out. It's like, you can cut out whatever you want.
Okay, yes. Any other overanalysis?
Clearly, Sisko had some moral problems with those people being abandoned there and wanted to do something to help them and seemed very genuine in that. And it didn't seem to be just, oh, I want you to help us until we escape and then forget you guys. And then with Julian, he had the dilemma as well of maybe we should be doing something to turn off these microbes to disable it because of what it's doing. I thought you saw two aspects there of people coming to sort of the same place from different directions.
Hmm. This thing that Kira said earlier when they thought the Kai was dead and she said it's just also senseless.
Mm-hmm.
It almost feels senseless to leave her there because these people have been unable to evolve or change or learn any lessons. And the thing we don't know is if these microbes stop them from being able to do that and if this cycle will just repeat forever. And now she's just a part of the cycle and there's nothing that she can do about it.
Oh.
It seems like such a funny use of this character who is really interesting and has added a lot in the two episodes that she was in.
Yeah.
And now we've just kind of dumped her in the middle of this thing. It doesn't feel like we're coming back to this. This seems like a one-time episode. So I don't know. It's not satisfying in some way.
It doesn't feel satisfying what happened to this character.
Yes.
That they've left, that sort of
her
left
arc.
Her. Yeah.
Is disappointing. Although what she did in this episode, I loved. But it just feels like it's ending kind of with a whimper.
Oh, interesting. Another way of looking at it is maybe the Kai had actually angered the prophets and this was her ultimate punishment. She's going to be stuck in a world with idiots who will be fighting a war forever
that
and ever.
That is mean.
Yeah. Hey, gods tend to be pretty mean in their punishments.
That's just a whole different thing I hadn't even thought of. Well, I hope that's not the case. I don't know what else to say about that. That's terrible.
Yeah, that would be very brutal.
Yeah. I guess you're supposed to look at it differently. differently.
Yeah.
You're supposed to look at it like this is a new beginning for the Kai, a new beginning for the Ennis and the Noel Ennis, and a new beginning for Kira. I think that's the way you're supposed to look at it.
It's a potential salvation for both sides in this conflict, that the Kai's ultimate goal will be to reconcile the irreconcilable.
Mm, okay.
Looking at it as a positive direction, as opposed to my previous theory, which was pretty negative.
Yeah. Okay. Any other over-analysis?
Well, there's a number of questions I would like to ask, such as where is the planet that these people came from?
Yeah, with technology to bring people back from the dead.
And the final thing is, shouldn't Bashir take some samples with him? I mean, if this is that technologically advanced, you'd really want a copy of those microbes and the keep all that in the computer. That could be very valuable.
This is an excellent point. I hope he took some samples. But he's not that smart. He was real busy thinking, oh man, Dax is on the shuttle. I can start creeping as soon as I get there.
Oh, hi, Dax.
I fixed the computer on the shuttle all by myself. And I'm only a salutatorian.
Admit it, Julian. You just powered it off and powered it back on again.
Reboot. Okay, that's it.
That wraps it up for me.
Okay, let's go to Women in the Future. I think this was a pretty good episode for Women in the Future. I was really happy with the main arc for Kira. Yeah, they showed her angry side, of course, but they worked hard to explain where that came from. And I think she got kind of a nice redemption arc there with the Kai, essentially giving her permission to forgive herself for the life that she led. So when I look back on that episode called Dax with the woman who played Data's mother, there were three scenes, I think, with her in them, three or four scenes, just, you know, a handful, and they were pretty short. But the impact that she had on that episode was so amazing that it convinced me to give that episode a thumbs up, because she was tremendous. And in this episode, I loved that scene so much between Kira and the Kai that I can forgive some of the just almost goofiness of these idiots who can't grow or change or learn that fighting is pointless when you just die and then come back. There's no value in the fight, and there's been no evolution. To me, that I can't relate to that. I don't understand that. It just seems dumb.
But also, I think in that scene, there's an interesting contrast between Kira and this race. Because Kira was fighting for a very specific reason, and the war ended, and Kira stopped fighting. And in the episode past prologue, she was given the opportunity, effectively, to continue fighting, even though the war was over. Yeah. Because I'm guessing that faction would probably keep on moving the goalposts so they could keep on fighting until they got whatever they wanted. And the other side of this, which are fighting for nothing other than, well, they've always been fighting, so we continue to fight. Kira was fighting for a reason, and these people aren't.
It showed that the female character was smarter than all of them. Women in the Future.
So you thought Kira stopped being kind of a cutout of It's Angry Woman?
Well, let's see. I think yes. For that moment, yes.
Yeah.
But that gives me hope that we're going to build on that.
Okay.
Okay, let's move into rating. Thumbs up, thumbs down, or neutral?
I'm going with thumbs up. Even though there was a few hokey things in this episode and there was a little bit hand wavy, I did actually enjoy it.
Thumbs up for me too. Actually, I think this may have been my favorite episode.
Really?
Yeah, and I'm disappointed to see on IMDb that the rating for this episode is so low. I think I can understand it because, like I said, the goofy aliens who, you know, it just seemed like they were there just to make this little story happen and to have the Kai land there and whatever.
But it was such a great veteran story.
So many good things happened in this episode.
I mean, if anything, what's kind of funny about this episode is the world has moved more towards this episode than it was in the 90s. Thinking of things like the problems that veterans have today with PTSD and recovering from being in conflict. And this character of Kira is clearly suffering the same kinds of things.
It's really fascinating to watch Star Trek develop such a backstory for characters. That doesn't always happen. A lot of times, the depth that you get is really only from the stories that they're telling on the show.
Right.
They started from the beginning trying to imply that she had a past and that it really impacted her. But we're just now kind of getting into how it impacted her and what it means to her today. So, that's cool. That's good. We can watch the next one.
And it does mean I can't keep being surprised with you liking episodes, seeing as you've actually liked a number of episodes now.
Yeah, I've liked a couple of them in a row now. I'm still going to pick on these things I don't like. And I'm still irritated with Bashir. His whole character is still annoying, and I hope they do better. But in this episode, he didn't creep on any women. And he didn't do it in the last episode either, but they didn't give him the chance. So great. Keep going. Give him something else to do. I'm sure he'll be fine.
Well, they're working on him. They're trying to build the character.
Right. I can't think of a single example of sexual harassment that happened in this episode.
Bashir didn't even hit on Shelar's second in command.
Gosh. Okay, that is it for Season 1, Episode 12. Come back next week for Lucky Episode 13. In the meantime, if you'd like to tell us your own overanalysis of this or any episode, or if you just want to say something nice, please email us at rebingeit@gmail.com or tweet at us at rebingeit. Also, check us out on talkthroughmedia.com. You can leave us feedback there and listen to all of our other awesome podcasts.
Thanks for joining us on the Rebinge Deep Space Nine podcast.
That's it for me.
And that's it from me. His name is Shelar, the brother of Shirar, I am going to assume.
Shirar.
Jinx. Jinx.